Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, Team Olivet. Allison here. While we're on hiatus, we still wanted to curate a little culture for you while we get ready to launch Season 3 of Olivet. So think of this edition of the podcast as some of it. The producers work very hard on the show, so we wanted to shine a spotlight on them and their work. So today we present to you an Olivet producer pick.
Hi, this is Simon Close, one of the Olivet producers, and today's producer pick is picked by me, and it's an interview we did with the Milk Carton Kids last year. There's a point in this interview when Joey Ryan, one half of the Milk Carton Kids, is talking about the musicians that they get compared to, and he says the one that he's fondest of is the Smothers Brothers. And that's actually the comparison that I always use to describe them too. They're a duo, they write great songs, they have excellent harmonies, and they've also nailed that kind of hilarious stage banter as stage bickering thing, which you will definitely hear in this interview. The other reason I'm picking this one is so that I can recommend their web series, where they talk to musician friends of theirs and play songs virtually with them. It's called Sad Songs Comedy Hour, and it's one of my favorite video streams to come out of the last several months. So definitely check that out. But first, listen to this interview, which I hope you enjoy.
This is Olivet on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. To be clear, the multiple Grammy-nominated folk duo, the Milk Carton Kids, are grown men. They are talented men. Men with a sense of a certain sense of humor. Case in point, the name they chose. That's not to suggest they aren't serious musicians. With only two guitars, Joey Ryan and Kenneth Pattingale, hi guys.
Hey, y'all.
Write emotional, heart-wrenching songs while also being hilariously dry and sometimes sardonic on stage. These are things you really have to see and hear for yourself, but to give you a sense, here's how they announced their new album, The Only Ones, a few weeks ago online. Quote, "The Only Ones is out today!" Exclamation point. It's got love, it's got conflict, it's got existential dread, refugees, depression, and guilt-ridden fathers. You know, a folk album. The Milk Carton Kids are a few days into their largely sold-out tour. They're calling it the A Night with the Milk Carton Kids in Very Small Venues at Very Low Ticket Prices tour. They'll be at Carnegie Hall tonight, fancy, and returning to Montclair, New Jersey on December 6th. But now they're in our studios. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Afternoon.
You're going to start us off with a song.
Yeah, I meant every word I said, which feels a little bit distasteful after calling our tour very intimate venues with very small ticket prices and that we're playing Carnegie Hall. That we did not mean every word we said there.
To be fair, it's not exactly Carnegie Hall. It's Zankel Hall in Carnegie Hall. It's the smaller room.
So we should put an asterisk?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the tickets are very expensive.
Joey's mom still is claiming that he's playing Carnegie Hall.
I understand that.
Yeah. Here we go.
2, 3. I don't wanna fight anymore. Maybe you were right. I'm so every word I said. I don't wanna lie. Don't wanna waste your time. I'm so tired. I can still remember saying like it was yesterday when I first heard your name, that I'd never love again. And I think it's for the best. And if you were wondering, I meant every word I said. Take it as a sign, take it on the chin. Cut me off like a stranger just walked in. Cast me aside, keep your head up, eyes front, don't look back again. I don't wanna fight anymore. Don't wanna say goodbye. I'm so tired.
Well, that might be the most lovely thing people hear on 93.9 today. That was just beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hopefully it didn't cause any car accidents on the West Side Highway, lulling people to sleep.
And see, there you go. <It's a> contradiction. When was the first time you picked up a guitar, Kenneth? Or was someone put one in your hands?
You know, I was having that conversation with one of the people in our crew this week, and I don't remember. But it wasn't super early. I was a cello player from very early. I just played the cello when I was 4 and made it for about 14 years after that. But the guitar was sometime in my early teens, or maybe, you know, 9 or 10. I don't really remember, though.
Did you choose the cello at 3 or 4?
No, my mother chose the cello for me.
And how was your reaction to that? You stuck with it for a while, but initially.
Yeah, I've come to accept it as a very important thing in my musical history. It's what defined my sense of melody and harmony and counter melody, and that very specifically the cello. Most often you only play one note at a time, and there's obviously exceptions, but learning an instrument that way is very different than strumming chords and singing a melody. And so having that kind of programmed into my fingers and into my DNA, I think, has sort of led the path in one direction in this weird
experiment.
Strictly
speaking, that wouldn't get into your DNA. It would be more like your muscles, muscle memory.
Maybe it would rewire some neurons. So yeah.
And nothing at all to do with your genetics, though.
So. Well,
just to be clear.
Just to be clear. We like to be clear and accurate. Facts matter.
They do, yeah.
Still?
Round here, yeah.
Okay, great.
When well, you'd be interested in this fact.
Okay.
Joey is not a guitar player technically. He hasn't risen above the threshold. What he's doing over here doesn't have a name, strictly speaking. I'm just in the interest of
I'm interested in what
accuracy.
Your next question was.
I was just going to be, when did you first pick up that instrument?
It was last week. He's making very slow progress, but we're encouraging him.
My father taught me how to play House of the Rising Sun when I was 16, which is the magic song for learning how to play folk music because it's got all the first position chords in it. So if you ever need to learn how to play every single folk song ever, just learn House of the Rising Sun and you'll know all the chords.
Was it always going to be folk music for you?
No, it was never going to be folk music for me. This was an accident that I stumbled into sort of after college. My whole life was academics and athletics. And then somehow at the end of college, I just started writing songs and got peer pressured into it, I guess.
What were you studying?
Psychology.
Did you think you were going to go down that road?
Yeah, by default. I don't think that I had a particular passion for it. But I enjoyed learning about the brain and kind of focusing on the neuroscience and that side of the psychology program. And so, yeah, that was the plan, was to just keep going into graduate school along that path until I was sidetracked.
And what sport?
Tennis was my main sport as a young person. Driving all over Southern California, playing awful tournaments at 8 in the morning in Fullerton or wherever.
So people can't see, but if people have seen you guys play, Kenneth, you have a white kerchief right above your capo on the neck of your guitar.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that it actually has a practical thing. It's not
your
look.
The guitar would buzz. In the beginning when we played, the guitar would buzz. It's a crummy guitar from the 50s, and so it would do that. But then it kind of became a thing. The guitar worked itself out. It doesn't buzz anymore, but now it's sort of become an... icon in our small way. The first time they put us on a magazine cover, we forgot to put the handkerchief on, and that's all that people talked about. And so then I realized
you got hate mail for the lack of a kerchief.
That's the stuff of the music industry that can drive you bonkers.
The dark side.
It is the dark side. My guests are the Milk Carton Kids, Joey Ryan and Kenneth Pattingale. Excuse me. So your last album was produced by someone who I just think is one of the best producers, writers, at Joe Henry, just one of the greats, the all-time greats. And you guys are friends, would you say that? Yes?
Yes.
What have you learned from him? I'm really curious.
There's a couple, I think, lessons that I could articulate succinctly enough for a live radio program.
It's public radio, you can
keep going. Oh, it can be long? Great. The main thing is his producing style, which is to be... He says that his strategy for producing a great record is mostly to pick the right people, put them in a room together, and make them feel good, basically, so that they all are comfortable enough to perform their best. So, you know, some producers will tell people exactly what to play or reference a lot of albums or songs that people might have in common to kind of steer people in the right direction. I think he believes in a more... holistic approach towards, kind of like a shamanistic approach toward putting the right people in the room, making sure that the whiskey is of high quality and getting the best out of the people that he's chosen to put in the room. So, yeah, we got to experience that firsthand during the making of our last album, for sure. And there were a lot of people in the room.
Nice segue, thank you.
You're welcome.
The last record was really lush and full, and in this one, you guys stripped down a little bit.
Yeah, well, the last record was an exception for us, because ever since we got together in about 2010, the whole point was just to do as much as we could with these two guitars and our two voices, and we never performed with any other instrumentation or recorded with any other instrumentation, kind of as a construct, as an artificial limitation that we found liberating, but it had been long enough and we were feeling a little bit stuck, and so we wanted to remove that constraint and see what happened. So we kind of overcorrected in the other direction. I think one day we ended up with 12 people tracking live in the studio, so it was quite a different experience for us. And yet now for this new one, I think we learned a lot about ourselves as songwriters and performers.
Yeah, which is that we don't have that much money, so...
to pay Wait. Everybody. So yeah, now we're back to just the two of us again.
The Only Ones is the name of the new album. And, you know, scroll through, everything is co-written by the two of you. How do you work together?
dysfunctionally.
We have an adversarial relationship.
This conversation. I'm just
and it's based on impossible consensus building. We both have mutual veto power over everything, and unlimited filibuster rights.
It's very much like governments.
Yeah, we're kind of like Congress.
You know how
they
Brexited and then just time marches on, and so nobody really knows what will happen, when will happen. There's all sort. That's kind of like our partnership is like Brexit, I think. Joey Brexited many years ago, and we're just going day to day.
Yeah, we just have no plan for how to separate, so we keep staying together.
When did you write this record?
Probably over the last, it was a shorter writing period for this one than we usually take, because it was only a year since the album before this came out. Mm-hmm. And so I think over the course of about 6 months leading up to last... April.
The ostensibly cheeky answer, though I don't mean it that way, is between the last one and this one is when we wrote it. But for you, maybe a few of the ideas had been kicking around, but then also when a deadline was set, some writing happened that otherwise wouldn't.
And we write separately. Usually we like not to sit down in a room together with a blank piece of paper because that's awkward. But we'll usually come together periodically and share the ideas that we've been working on and then open ourselves up to the harshest and most constructive of criticisms from the other person. And that's really, I think, the main way that we work together is by being each other's editors.
Can we hear another song?
You bet.
Fine.
I ain't one for leaving, but if you treat me wrong, I'll be gone. Gone before the sun goes down. Ain't no coming back now, ain't no coming back around so long. Long before the sun goes down. I won't apologize, I've been hiding all my life. I find feel that freedom on the rise. Woo-hoo. I ain't packing bags up, I ain't carrying a thing called my name. You won't see me again. Death might be awaiting, but it better get some wings. I'll be flying, riding on the wind. I won't apologize, I've been hiding all my life. I finally feel that freedom on the rise. All my life, I finally feel that freedom on the rise.
Ooh. My guests are the Milk Carton Kids. That is Joey Ryan and Kenneth Pattingale. I don't know. You know what? Writers just can't help themselves. They like to compare you to different duos, right? Simon and Garfunkel, Everly Brothers. Is there a comparison that you've read that you think, yeah, that's okay. And then the other one you think, that is just ridiculous.
The one that I'm most fond of actually is Smothers Brothers. And I didn't know who the Smothers Brothers were until we started performing. And about the fourth time someone came up after a show and said, you guys are kind of like the Smothers Brothers. I finally went down the YouTube rabbit hole and watched everything on the internet that there is of the Smothers Brothers. And now it's the comparison that I cherish the most. But I think probably the most accurate one, and it's a little bit odd is Simon and Garfunkel, and we never consciously reference them as singers or writers, even though obviously we're very familiar and sort of their music is in our DNA, metaphorically speaking. But if I listen back to recordings of us and early recordings of them, I do think our voices just kind of sound similar, not in a way that we could have ever done intentionally or could avoid. Obviously, all of it's high compliments as far as we're concerned.
Well, and I can't think of the one that annoys me. I really can't, actually. But the Simon and Garfunkel one, the part that's interesting to me is that it's when you're in a band and we talk to people like you and we go and do very music-centric activities all the time, it's hard to forget that music, while omnipresent in our lives, is not the most important thing in many people's lives. And in the beginning, it felt like when we're in small clubs and there's 100 people, it seems like all of them are super music fans. But when we're playing in a 1,500-seat concert hall, a lot of that audience, that's like one of the few shows they go to that year. Or the way that
somebody dragged them there.
Yeah, the way that we're in their life is because they saw us on, you know, they heard us on this program, or they saw us on a TV show or something. They're not big music fans or deep music fans. And to me, the idea that somebody can say we resemble Simon and Garfunkel or the Everly Brothers, and that is actually relatable to people who are not deep, deep music fans, that's very validating to me, because that's really good company to be in.
I'm going to give you the option. We can do two or three more questions, or you can play one more song.
I like talking, personally. I mean, you know, especially in this world, you can hear a song right now, or you could just click a button on your phone and hear it for free, or your $10 a month or whatever. And it's not every day that we get to talk to like the MTV of my childhood. So
thanks, man. All right, so we're going to keep talking, and then afterward we'll get you to record the song.
Great.
So what's changed over your songwriting over the course of your career?
I think one of the things for us that's changed recently was a result actually of having done that last album with a full band with a bunch of other musicians. Before that, I think we got into a little bit of a songwriting rut where there's like four or five different songs that we just kept writing over and over again. And I think it was because we were tailoring them to what we thought our strengths were as performers. So the way that what we can do with two guitars, we kind of felt like, okay, there's a few different modes in which we can operate, and we started writing songs like for that. But I think making a record with a larger ensemble was a big part of it. Was, you know, we wanted to break out of that, and I think we did successfully. And then I also think that we have successfully carried those lessons into this latest album, The Only Ones, where the songwriting is very different, and it was a little bit disorienting for us to show up in the studio with just the two of us and songs that were kind of different in form than what we'd written before, and have to try and figure out how to perform it in a way that felt complete with just the two guitars.
I feel like all of this in a certain way just kind of reflects life, and life isn't hard. Life isn't easy. Life can be hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so even the last few years, Joey had some kids and I got sick, and there's we've played now almost. There was an election. We've played almost 1,000 shows together over a decade. And so like there's all of these different factors that go into what you do intentionally and what you do unintentionally. I think in some ways it's all a reflection of that stuff bubbling back up. And to me, especially this last record, but an important thing to carry into the future for us is, I think there was somewhere in the last few years where if it wasn't a result of getting burnt out, we sort of lost sight of having to be intentional. I think
the name of the new album is The Only Ones. The Milk Carton Kids are Joey Ryan and Kenneth Pattingale. Thank you guys for coming to the studio and playing.
Of course. Thank you.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I'm going to make them play another song. That's some of All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and I will meet you back here next time.